Hey, thanks for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. And I do mean that we are online. This staff, a bunch of Google monkeys. Is that fair to say, Ian Chilog?
I'm a self-confessed Google monkey.
We spend the morning looking for the most searched, most popular, most blogged, most emailed. Some of the categories I don't understand. Most sent? That's one of
What's the difference between most sent and most emailed?
Oh, that's, I think you print it out, mail put it in an envelope, and mail it. That's what I do.
Yeah.
It's the most. All right, Dan Pashman.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I've had a most emailed here from the Los Angeles Times, the International Kilogram Conundrum. This is something I always wondered about. I guess some of you guys have already heard about this, but I always wondered, how do they define a kilogram? How does everyone know exactly what a kilogram is? Well, it turns out there is one kilogram that is the kilogram that everyone uses, from which all other kilograms spring forth. And it's kept in Gaithersburg, Maryland, 40 feet underground, secured in a temperature and humidity-controlled vault, and it's called kilogram number 20. But there's a problem with kilogram number 20, and that is slowly but surely losing weight.
Oh.
It's been more than a century since it was created in France out of platinum and iridium. It's a cylinder about the size of an espresso shot. And it's lost about 50 micrograms. Now, that's about the weight of one grain of fine salt. But that matters for hardcore physics people and
hardcore measurers.
Yeah, right.
They're out there.
So this has kicked off a huge international crisis, and they're trying to figure out a way to redefine measurements, redefine a kilogram. And the idea is, instead of using an object, scientists are searching for some property of nature or scientific constant, such as the vibrations of a cesium atom, now used to define a second.
I like how you just threw out cesium atom like it's
ain't no thing.
Yeah,
like a bacon cheese on a roll.
Yeah, like ready for this? Bam! That snap of a finger, that was one vibration of a cesium atom, right there.
How did they make the first kilogram? What did they?
That's a great. I don't know. I guess they built a mold that was 3 cubits by 4 cubits by 3 cubits, and they went from there.
Of course.
A little measurement humor for you. Try to enjoy it. This is my favorite part of the article, actually, is over the course they have lost or damaged 6 other copies of the kilogram measure.
Yeah.
Because for other, among other reasons, because of war and or clumsiness.
That's so
all
often
great
the excuse
tragedies
for everything.
Right.
War and
so
or.
They got 2 ideas that are leading contenders. One involves counting the trillion atoms in the most perfect silicon sphere ever made. The other attempts to measure the electrical current necessary to balance a 1 kilogram weight against Earth.
We got other people we got to get to.
Oh, man.
Rachel, you're up next.
Okay, mine's one of the most emailed on Yahoo and the BBC. We all know that the French like their French language, but they apparently don't like it to be the language that's used in their entry to the Eurovision Song Contest. You guys know this contest. It happens in Europe. It's very popular. Big pop song in Europe is picked from
each country has a song, right?
Yeah, each country picks their song. And the entry for France this year is a song whose lyrics are in English.
Dope.
They don't like that. We have a clip of it. Let's listen. By the way, in case you can't understand that, even though it is in English, he's saying, I'm looking for a band today. I see the Chivers anyway. Through my eyes, oh, I'm alone in life to say. I love the Chivers anyway. Because Chivers look divine. I don't really know what Chivers are.
Oh, okay.
It's English.
Anyway, an MP in France is trying to urge the company that runs France's TV networks and pick the song to pick a different one. Other people say, get over it, we're French, but, you know, it's not demeaning to our culture to have this song in English.
I didn't mind that song being in English, but it also, I object, it just didn't seem very good.
That's what I object.
Well,
I'm with
you. Have you heard most of the entries in the Eurovision contest?
No, I have not.
Ian, where's your most from?
It's a most emailed from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. About 40 years ago, this guy wrote a dictionary of Alaska place names, which sort of, a lot of Eskimo origins to the way things are named up there, and really interesting roots. And it's gone out of print, went out of print about 14 years ago. And now a guy is trying to get it published again. And the names are just amazing. I'll just go through a few of them. Mishap Creek was named because it's also called Big Lost Creek. Apparently a lighthouse keeper was trying to cross said creek. He took his clothes off so he wouldn't get them wet and tried to cross the water. Then he tried to throw his clothes across. They fell in. went downstream and he was naked. That was the mishap. Then there's the mining town, which is called Chicken, Alaska. Chicken got its name because they wanted to name the town Ptarmigan, which is, I guess, a bird up there. Mm-hmm. But nobody could spell that word. So they're like, we'll call it chicken. Instead. People can And then there's Atlasta Creek, which...
I got there, Atlasta?
Well, actually, there were...
Did you finally reach it?
Apparently, the wife of an owner of a house there were no houses there. And finally, one was built, and she said, at last, a house. And they're like, all right, we'll call it Atlasta.
I like that. Although that would worry me about some of the street names that could come up in New York City.
Yeah. Well, I started thinking about back home. You know, I'm from West Virginia, which has a lot of crazy names. There's a place up the road from where I lived called Big Ugly Creek. And, like, when I was in junior high, this kid was kidnapped, and the big headline in the paper said Big Ugly Boy Missing, which got us a lot of press. So I'm thinking I'm going to figure out why it's named Big Ugly.
All right. You do that. We'll come back to
you. I have a guess.
Is it nice?
Big Ugly? No, it's big.
Well, there's your first hint.
And it might be ugly. Editor Tricia McKinney from the control room.
Big ugly control room in here. Okay, I have one of the most read and the most emailed at USA Today. Here's the headline. China's Shaolin Temple installs luxury restrooms. So apparently, you know, it's one of the most famous sites in China, the Shaolin Temple, Buddhist monks. It's about the simple life. They now have luxury restrooms worth $430,000, which I'm guessing is, you know, Olympics-related tourists in China, et cetera, et cetera.
So. What do you get for that?
Oh, okay. The most lavish of the restrooms is more than 1,600 square feet, equipped with a diaper-changing station for infants.
Very, that's bigger
very
than most New York City apartments.
Yeah, no kidding. Seriously. Bigger than my apartment.
What are they charging for that?
You also get uniformed cleaners and a foyer with an LCD television.
That means the bathroom attendant, you have to tip that person like $300.
A foyer? There's a
foyer?
There's a foyer in the bathroom?
To the bathroom.
And
you can watch TV while you're waiting.
Two ply, three ply.
You know, this article, it's an AP article, and they didn't really dig in there on the ply issue.
It's okay,
we need to look into that.
Yeah.
Silky.
Suede.
Hey, Matt Martinez, slide in here.
Oh, hi there.
Hi, super senior.
So I actually have two today. Okay. Is that all right?
Go for it.
Sure, okay. Go for it. You're the boss.
Fantastic. Well, the first one, I was, Googling around this morning, as I usually do, and I went to the Google Trends, and of course, number one on a Thursday morning is always the South Park episode, and it was overlogging. And so it's overlogging. That's a weird kind of title for a South Park. It turns out everyone loses internet access. Not just everyone in South Park. Everyone loses internet access, and they go nuts. Here's a little clip from it.
To get some sense of this,
oh, that's
recent
not it. That's a. that's a.
That's so not it.
That is totally not South Park.
That doesn't sound like South
that's
Park.
Not
at
Cartman.
All.
That's not Cartman at all.
That's
unless
not Kenny.
Unless NPR's Howard Berkus is now moonlighting as an actor on South Park.
He's Kyle? I had no idea.
That
He's
might
a talented
be it.
Guy. He could pull it off.
Yes.
Think.
Do we have the clip?
There has okay. to be a way to find out what's going on.
We can't! Don't you get it? There's no internet to find out why there's no internet!
What did we used to do to get the news before the internet?
A television!
They're running to the TV.
Once again, we apologize, but we cannot bring you the news. It appears that we have no internet here at News 4. We'll be happy to bring you up on current events just as soon as our internet is back.
So
it's a sad state of affairs.
So they head out to California to find internet, and it turns out that the internet is one giant Linksys modem that they just have to replug. And the last one I have is one of the most emailed at NPR. It's a report from NPR's Howard Berkus, and it's about how some of the world's elite competitive swimmers are using this new high-tech swimsuit, the Laser Racer from Speedo, and they're breaking some major records. Here's the report.
To get some sense of this recent torrent of swimming world records, go to WCSN.com.
Very tight. Who's got it? Rogan, world record. Veldhuis, five to swim. Veldhuis breaks her own world record. Another world record bites the dust. Lochte comes up in front. Lochte sprints away. And Lochte has got this race shot to pieces. Ryan Lochte does it again and takes another world record.
Each of these swimmers wore sleek and dark ankle-to-neck swimsuits with Speedo logos. The Speedo Fast Skin Laser Racer was worn by 35 of the 37 swimmers, setting recent world records. American Ryan Lochte set four of them last week alone. Yesterday, he met with reporters in Chicago.
When I put it on, I feel like I'm some kind of like action hero, like ready to take on the world. And it makes me feel like when I dive in that water that I'm swimming like downhill.
Lochte then tried to describe the suit's design and dynamics in a noisy hotel ballroom. It's basically seamless, with water-repellent pads where the body normally creates drag.
It's a lot more compressed. Like, if you put it on, you can feel like your core being like sucked in. And, I mean, it's just a great feeling.
Lochte is sponsored by Speedo. And one U.S. Olympic coach has already suggested that all Team USA swimmers should wear the Speedo laser. But teammate Brendan Hansen is sponsored by Nike. He doesn't want to be forced to wear the competitor's swimsuit.
As a Nike athlete, I go up to them and say, look, you need to get your stuff together. You need to figure out what's going on. And if they don't respond, then we're in a different situation, and that door is definitely open.
Nike and other swimsuit makers have new suits already on the way. This innovation is typical before an Olympics, as is falling world records. But the Speedo suit is so effective, some say, it amounts to technological doping. Some European swimmers and coaches want the International Swimming Federation to reconsider its approval of the Speedo laser. But four-time swimming gold medalist John Neighbor thinks the advantage is more mental than physical.
If you're standing on the starting blocks and you feel fast and you have no regrets, no worries, no doubts, that in and of itself, that psychological mental state is hugely valuable. If you have the mental state, that is more of a difference than whatever technological advantage would be provided.
Neighbor was once sponsored by Speedo, but he's no fan of the new suit. He's worried that its $500 price tag will put the parents of younger competitive swimmers in a bind. He also thinks any advantage is diminished by Speedo's promise to make the suit available to any Olympian who wants it. All this attention to a swimsuit distresses American breaststroker Brendan Hansen.
The last thing I worry about going into a race is the suit. I've never used it as a crutch. I'm never going to look at it as what makes the athlete. I don't want somebody to ever say, oh, Brendan won the gold medal in the Olympics because he was wearing a certain suit. I don't ever want that. I would rather them talk about my work ethic and my personality and character as an athlete.
That doesn't mean Hansen is oblivious to technology. He debuts Nike's entry in this swimming arms race at the U.S. Olympic trials in June.
That was NPR's Howard Berkus reporting, one of the most emailed stories from NPR. You can find a link to that and all the stories on the most at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.